Welcome back to the Occult Rejects. Today we're joined by Dan Richards. A lot of you already know Dan for his sharp commentary, his willingness to get into the weeds on controversial topics, and his talent for cutting through nonsense in a way that's both entertaining and brutally effective. He's someone who can talk about big ideas, weird claims, internet drama, and serious debates all in the same breath, and somehow makes it all work. I've had the pleasure of meeting Dan twice in real life, and I can honestly say he's a genuine cool dude. He's easy to talk to, down to earth, and just as engaging off camera as he is online. But once he gets online, that other side kicks in. And that's where the trolling, the shade, and the absolute precision start showing up. His ability to throw shade with style is honestly impressive and part of what makes him so fun to watch. What I appreciate about Dan is that he brings intelligence, humor, and a little chaos to the conversation. He's not afraid to challenge people. He's not afraid to ask uncomfortable questions. And he definitely doesn't mind ruffling feathers when he thinks it's deserved. So I'm really glad to have him back on. But before we introduce him, let me introduce the other rejects. And we got Judith the Loon joining us. What is going on, Judith? How are you?
Hello. Thank you for having me. And welcome, Super Sexy D. You could catch me on YouTube and on X as the Loon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us. And my man, Headless Giant, what is going on, sir? How the hell are you?
I'm doing good. You can catch me on X and on Instagram and also on YouTube. We had an excellent trialogue this morning with me, Indigo, and Ricardo. It was amazing. We had a great two-hour round trip talking about everything from machine elves to, everything. It was great.
Nice. Got to talk about the machine elves. Love it. Thank you very much for jumping on, my man. And we got Ethan Indigo. What is going on, sir? How are you?
Great to be here. Great to see everybody. Nick, thanks for putting together all these great meetings of the minds. Dan, awesome to talk with you once again. And I'm Ethan Indigo Smith, easy to find on all the social media, several books out there, and more articles coming. And again, I appreciate being here.
Of course. Thank you, sir. And finally, Dan, the man himself, please, if there was anything I left out, please let people know, or if you want to advertise your YouTube or anything.
No, you're fine. The only thing I'd want to say is that May 1st through 3rd, we got the Quest for Ancient Civilizations Conference. I'm getting a little dyslexic there, sorry. But it's going to be me and a bunch of other people, too. David Hatchett Childress, and we're going to have, I believe, Hugh Newman's going to be there. There's going to be a bunch of people there that's... I'll put a link down below on my channel, but yeah, I'm going to be there in person. You'll get to drink with me, yell at me, scream at me. Oh, Brandon Lee, man, I thought he died on the Crow. Holy shit. Sorry, I'm sure it's the first time you've heard that in your entire life. Sorry.
Definitely the first time. Hello. Hello, everyone.
But yeah, it's good to see everybody. And that's the only thing I wanted to plug. And yeah, let's just chat away.
Yeah. Real quick, that's the one that's coming up that you just mentioned that is being done by Wandering Wolf.
Yeah, by Wandering Wolf and Robert from World Z Media. It's in Sedona, Arizona, which is the hippiest of hippie towns. It's pretty wildly crazy. I'd never been there before. I went to speak with Graham Hancock there about a year ago, and I looked it up and Sedona, Arizona is known for ley lines and vortices. So I'm like, okay, that is a fucking hippie town if I ever heard of one. So what do you guys have? Ley lines? Yeah. Okay, mushrooms, nice. But we don't grow here.
Yeah, I just wanted to let people know, me and Headless had the pleasure of going to the one in, Phoenix. And that's, I saw you for the second time. And yeah, highly suggested if people can make it. It was awesome event. Had a blast. A lot of great speakers and great people there. So definitely check it out if you can. But
it was a lot of fun. All right.
Well, yeah, it was. So I guess I don't know I know I wanted to talk to you about the Second Sphinx, but I know there's also other things that you've been kind of going on about.
Second Sphinx is fine. It's interesting.
Yeah. So what is your thoughts on all of that?
Well, I've always thought there is a Second Sphinx. That's funny. It's even no matter what your opinions are on it, it seems like alternate history people, almost all of us are like, there's probably a Second Sphinx somewhere. You see it in all the stelas and everything, and then you have all this dualistic shit in Egyptian literature and whatnot. So it's funny that we have this search going on from our perspective, but you don't really say, play on it. You don't really see you don't really see academics looking for the second Sphinx every now and again. But in this case, we have how do you put it? I personally still have the opinion that the second Sphinx is in the sky. I think it's Leo. But the SAR scan stuff, you know, I'm assuming everybody here knows it's proprietary. The software that they use to scan under the pyramids and to scan under Hawara and to scan for the second Sphinx, this is proprietary stuff. The scan data comes from the satellite. They access this data and then run it through the software. Without other people having the ability to use the software to verify it, it's, you know, it does have the trust me, bro thing attached to it.
So one thing I wanted to ask you real quick. Sorry.
Absolutely. No, you're fine. I'll babble all day. Sorry. So go.
No.
Cut me off quick.
the people who are dealing with this second Sphinx, is that also the Italian doctors that found the stuff under the pyramids?
Yes. That's the same technology and the same people. Yeah.
Okay,
Filippo Biondi I'm pretty sure it was Filippo that was on Matt Bell's podcast. Big plug to Matt Bell from Limitless. He's a stud and a half, and that's where he was interviewing Filippo, and that's where it took off. That's the news. The media grabbed onto that, and hopefully Matt got some follows out of the deal, because he don't need the money from ad revenue, so he just does his own thing on YouTube. So I do, you know, I have a lot of respect for Matt. I'll just really quickly. He's as far as rich dudes go, he's as cool as you're going to find. He's as down to earth as you're going to find. He'll quickly admit that he's like, I don't know. I didn't grow up in that kind of environment. He'll ask questions. He doesn't get all like, why do I care? I can buy your house. He's not none of that kind of attitude from him whatsoever. And he's very humble and a lot nicer of a guy than I could ever hope to be.
Oh yeah, I met him at Cosmic Summit. I thought he was a really nice guy.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
I actually didn't know he was loaded, and figured he probably wasn't by the way he acted.
Yeah. He owns Bell Industries, which is it's not a publicly traded company, but it's like Ross basically. It's a closed, they're like 30 states. He's got thousands and thousands of employees. Let's like put it that way. Thousands and thousands of employees. He's hundreds of stores, right? He's during COVID, he was able, because he's like Chick-fil-A. He can just do his own thing. He doesn't have shareholders to, you know, deal with. During COVID, he was buying up competitors' shit when they would close down and they'd auction it off. He's like, I'm the only guy there to bid. Take it. So.
Wow, smart.
Anyway, yeah, Matt's a stud. Yeah, Matt's a stud.
Super sexy.
He's almost as sexy as me.
But yeah, the reason why I was asking you that with the pyramids is because like again, there's only so many people that can have that technology to even say that that's what happened. Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like how you don't have too many people that have the same stuff to back up. Yet, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't you need? It would help if you had two or three other people kind of saying, "Oh, we found the same."
That's absolutely right. And another big problem is there's like a lump of dirt. Basically, you've probably seen the photographs of like a lump of dirt where they're proposing the Sphinx is. Matt from Ancient Architects, Matt Simpson, he brought up. I just was watching a short video of his earlier today or last night that was. A photograph of that same region from like the 1920s, and it doesn't have that lump of dirt where it looks like that dirt was dug out of somewhere else or whatnot, right? So that's another very interesting thing here. My opinion on their scan technology is they're using AI, right? So I think that's why we're going to see like problems. If you remember the first big scan they did, and it had like five king's chambers in the pyramid. Do you remember that? Do you remember when AI gave everything six thumbs and their freaking toes were fat backwards and all that?
I was gonna say, I'm still having problems with images sometimes when I ask it to do things with AI.
Sometimes, man, whoever's operating those things has got one hell of a sense of humor. It's like, I'm gonna make Keanu Reeves look as just dumb as I can for you here, buddy. But
I gotta ask anyway. About Hawara.
Yeah.
So we see from the historical record all of these references to this underground complex in Hawara. And if we really want a key to understanding what's, you know, maybe been lost in the rest of Egyptian history and Egyptian archaeology, that would be the main place. Why are they so reluctant to excavate Hawara, that huge underground complex there?
I think, well, for a few, I think there's a few reasons. One of them is that they've said for like a century that they know where Hawara is and that the labyrinth was all above ground and everything else is basically BS. So that's one thing. The second thing is, you know, they'll never give any of us a lick of credit for anything. All right. That's never going to happen. So if we go and we say, hey, we think this, I'll give you a prime example. Ben Van Kirkwick's work with the vases and the vase scan team and everything, at the very least, it's demonstrated that the ancient Egyptians had a lathe, a handheld lathe or something like that. So a much more precise lathing type of machinery, 1500 years or so, than we would give them credit for. Right. And it's not like insane, like it's not the ancient high technology Ben's looking for, but it is at the very, if you're really skeptical, at the very least, he's pushed the bar that far. Now, instead of saying, man, Ben really did some good work, those guys are just using that position as a stick to hit Ben over the head with, to say, look how stupid you are. Look how stupid. It's like, he deserves the fucking credit, guys. He's the one that's, I mean, he's not the only guy, but he's the reason you know it. He's the reason you're coming after him with it. And they need time to loot Hawara. Bingo. I see live Dan and everything stops. Oh, thanks so much. I want to say thanks to Nick McCartney. He's like a badass moderator for me and puts in a lot of free labor, which is great because it satisfies that like ancestral need for slaves. So I appreciate it, Nick. Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, no fun. Nah, you're good. You're good. You're good. So, yeah. From what you've seen, what do you think is the actual evidence like from behind this claim?
On the Sphinx, I'm pretty skeptical of it. Hawara, on the other hand, that's where I really want to dig. That's the place that out of all the spots that I'm, because even if the scan software is complete bullshit, the accounts, you know, Hawara was supposed to be one of four labyrinths, one of them being the one from the Minotaurs and all that shit on Crete. And then one, I forget what the other two were supposed to be, but there were four that I believe was Herodotus listed, and that they were all based on Hawara. And they found what they believed to be the one in Crete, but it barely really meets the standard of what's been described. So you wonder if it's if it's kind of a homage or a small pyramid, a mud brick version of the Great Pyramid, to sort of draw an analogy, right? Maybe it's just a step down. It's hard to say, but the Hawara maze was definitely a thing that was talked about a lot by ancient historians. So yeah, I personally think that I'm shocked that we haven't seen more action on that area since. I think it was Petrie was the first guy that was like, oh yeah, here we go, here's the maze, take care guys.
2015, you know, I mean, we're missing all this stuff. It's like, guys, it's right there. Herodotus talked about it, Pythagoras went there, Plato went there. All of these major figures in classical history were coming out of that place as this college of mystics, and we're just ignoring it for some reason.
They do that so much. I was really blown away. I'm working on a video. I'm working on several videos, but this will be a little spoiler on one that's coming in a month or two. The Giants thing, like I blew my mind. Like I was doing, I was just watching videos at random on like reels, just both doing nothing. And it had a one about one of the mounds over in West Virginia. And so I just was like, okay, that's a little interesting. So I start looking into it a little bit, and this bones in the thing were, there was like 13 skeletons total, and like 10 of them were like over 7 foot. The guy that records this, it's like, okay, so at that point, you got to check the dude. That's immediately my next thing. He's like, all right, is this guy, you know, is he Captain Giant Man? Was he, you know, was he a good scientist? What was his deal? He was a fucking great scientist. He was like really known for all kinds of shit. And like well-respected in the field of archaeology, and this wasn't the only time he reported giant bones. And they're not, like, insanely big. I mean, you know, 7 foot's not, like, so abnormal as to be, you know, we have 7 foot people in the NBA today. It's just that, honestly, I think a lot of that probably had to do with a little bit of cultural indignation. It's like, hey, whoa. You can't have these engines being taller than us. That's terrible. Because the Smithsonian comes out and puts out a errata, basically, and says, oh, no, guys, that's not exactly what happened. These weren't giant bones. These were, you know, he just mismeasured them. And that, honestly, is the guy's a fucking scientist. He's really good at all these different kinds of things and drawing pictures and all this exacting labor, but he doesn't know how to use a tape measure. I'm just like, come on, you guys. And it's the same kind of thing here. It's like, oh, yeah, Plato, Herodotus, these guys, oh, yeah, they knew all kinds of stuff. Every now and again, they were wrong, but that is bullshit. They just made that up. It's like, come on, guys.
Not to, kind of kill this and go back to where we were before, but there was another question I wanted to ask you. You did mention the Sphinx are in this. You think they're in the sky?
Yeah, I think that Leo is the second Sphinx that referenced. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say anything like what's like the reasoning, like, is there anything else besides that makes you think that, or?
Well, the sky ground dualism kind of thing, and you see multiple images of dualistic things in ancient Egypt, and one of them quite often is the Sphinx, and I think that's why a lot of people are looking for a second Sphinx. I mean, even on the stela, the dream stela right in front of it, it's got two Sphinxes back to back, right, like facing opposite directions.
I can see that.
Six, seven. Sorry.
No, fuck.
No. We're gonna do numbers now.
Yeah. Because the pyramids. I mean, I could see how maybe other things that they built might match stars or constellations.
Oh yeah, it's there's actually. Now, this is one of the funny things too. There's a lot of people that are really skeptical of the Orion-Giza correlation, and the reason is because of the 10,500 BC dating. That's going to put so many people off every time. But there's an archaeoastronomer named Vincenzo Orofino, and he wrote a couple of papers, in fact, that are discussing the Orion-Giza correlation. And he found what he believes to be a fourth dynasty reference, like a correlation. But which may or may not be accurate, but one of the coolest things about his work is that he found a direct inverse correlation between the magnitude of the star, the apparent magnitude, which is how bright it looks from the ground, and the size of the pyramid. And it's not just star brighter, pyramid smaller. It follows a steady line that happens to be a very popular mathematical form in their construction over there. It's like his work was really interesting to me, and it was like the first archaeoastronomer that actually took Robert Bovall's work seriously and was like, okay, let's see what we got under the hood here. And next thing you know, it's like you have a scientific debate. You have maybe it's 10,500 BC, you have a guy say it's fourth dynasty, there's another guy that thinks that the star Sirius is involved. It becomes what it should be, as opposed to being poo-pooed out the gate, which it was through bullshit means. There was no way to go check in those days in the 90s when Robert Bovall first talked about this, late 80s, early 90s. There was no way to get online and go say, what was the star, what was the constellation that housed the sun in the spring equinox of 10,500 BC? You were beholden to fucking astrological books that you had to go buy at a hippie store that may or may not even care if it's accurate, right? But nowadays you can go Google it. So one of the things they said is, oh, Leo wasn't in the star. And it's like, well, it was on the cusp. So it was at the start of Leo. Yeah. And the other one that they say is that it's backwards. It's backwards. It's 180 degrees backwards, except for, imagine that there's something drawn on this. There's two ways you can lay it down. Okay. So it's like, if I draw three dots on my hand and lay it down this way or lay it down this way, they're going to be 180 degrees off from each other. And if it's emulating the sky, it really is going to depend on the convention. So for them to say, oh, it's backwards, it's like it's a fucking 180 degrees backwards because you chose the wrong convention deliberately. So the debunkers were lying about this 3 decades ago, right out the gate. They fucking lied about it. And we're talking Ed Krupp, who's one of the premier archaeoastronomers in the world. I've got one of his books on my shelf, and I love his work normally, but he was an absolute shitheel on this one.
Do you think there's a lot of mind fuckery? Like, people actually sit there and like really spend time to like come give an answer to fuck up shit like that?
I think that there's a degree of that. You have you have social engineering's always a thing, right? And some people take jobs to, like, teaching's a great example of a parallel. Some people take jobs to educate the next generation. Other people take jobs to indoctrinate the next generation. So some people are writing papers with the intention of adding scientific data. And then there's guys like John Hoops, who is just out there basically to poo-poo all over the opposition. That being the people that are the most likely to buy their books, watch their fucking YouTube videos, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, these guys, why is our funding drawing up? Gee, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's crazy. It's like standing there at McDonald's and telling everybody that beef is stupid. Why are you eating cows? And then wondering why they don't come back. It's fucking crazy.
Now, just for, I guess, you know, for shits and giggles, let's say somehow they do actually say like there's something underneath there. What do you think that would change? Do you think that would change Egyptian, like in Egyptian history, the way we look at it?
I think if they found a second Sphinx, it would absolutely change Egyptian history. I mean, that's the whole thing. They are so hell bent on keeping this timeline intact, and I don't understand that part at all. They really are. I don't understand it. They are so hell bent on keeping this timeline intact that they massage data with the Bayesian modeling, that they do whatever they can to not have anything moved at all. And I understand that, like, it's been kind of the gold standard, like the Egyptian chronology that's based mostly on written records, but also on a handful of other things, has been, you know, you take written records and form it through stars and all kinds of, it's a complicated thing, but it's generally known as the written records. And this is to differentiate it from the times when carbon dating became the big part that informs things. Normally, they use carbon dating to refine dates. It's because it's a fucking hard science. But in the case of Giza, it's like, 250 years, 300 years off. Fuck, man, that's rough. You know, if we eliminate the later dates, and then we start with the ones, and we favor the ones that are closest to the ends of construction, and then we eliminate all the dates that don't correspond to known pharaohs, hey, look at that. The carbon dating fucking lines right up with the written records. It's like, okay, cool. We can do that with freaking creation science, man. We can do that with the Bible. We can do that with any fucking book you want. We can sit down, play around, move shit around, and eventually end up with data that supports our position. And some people will go down that road.
That's one thing. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think maybe you'd probably even notice, probably not saying it in the best way, but I feel like a lot of things get discredited because they want to, it doesn't fit our timeline of how this all happened.
Absolutely.
It's like, that's always the reason. That's so many reasons why. And it's just like, can we just say maybe it's wrong? Like, what the fuck's the problem with that?
Yeah. I got something. It seems like there's a massive problem with it because it doesn't co-align with the functionalist, mechanistic, Cartesian world that we live in. And so, you know, it's one of those things that if you don't add in the esoteric alchemical understanding of the signs and symbols that the Egyptians were using, kind of like what Dan was talking, what he's talking about was like the second Sphinx seems more likely to be an astrological significance more than that there's another Sphinx underneath it somewhere buried deep underground, which is easily can be debunked because of the, you know, it's a proprietary software that's finding it, you know? And so if we can go deep into the initiatory understanding of the mythological and the symbolic of what the Egyptians were actually doing with their mystery traditions, I think that's a really important understanding of how our world through time is evolving with consciousness interacting with these things, since the Egyptians really understood that and their understanding of what death means, which is completely different than what our understanding of death is today, which is really important.
It's a real good point. Yeah. I think if half the time that they spend on archaeology over there was also put into esotericism or the occult, they'd actually figure out more shit.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead. No, you're fine, Brandon. Go ahead.
Well, no, I get really excited about this because it's like that is the, I think once we can see it from there, our vision becomes not so myopic and it starts to expand itself, and our awareness of what is possible then can be broadened, and how we view the horizon of understanding of what Egyptology even is can be understood a lot better. Then we can actually look at these things differently from a different perspective, and then we're going to get different answers. It's very similar to like the climate nonsense that's going on. It's like, well, if we could add in the solar minimums and maximums into these things and the cyclical nature of how the planet changes, and then all of a sudden we get a lot different things. And then we're not talking about cows farting. We're actually talking about, you know, like how the earth changes through time and our place as humans within it all. That's it.
No, I think as far as the esotericism and stuff goes, it gets really difficult because it gets so attached to it's attached to religious and spiritual thinking, and you get into the realm of faith. And the problem with faith is the same thing that it's a problem when you're having discussions about alternate theories, like we're talking about the Sphinx, for example. If somebody comes in here and they're hellbent that they know for certain what's up with the second Sphinx and that's it, period, end of story, it's kind of hard to have a meaningful conversation with them. And the people that are the most prominent in the spiritual world tend to have that kind of self, I'm certain, I know for, I've got this, I'm informed from the higher power, or whatever, and that rubs the more skeptical types of brains the wrong way immediately. It's just like, I know for a fact. It's like, dude, we don't do gnosis up in here. We do evidence. And so, yeah, so there's a big, big difference in thinking. And then that lends itself to that same whole, to the mind fuckery again, where now they paint you all as conspiracy theorists, and they're not going to show you as like having a discussion about different, you know, the cabal or any of these more complicated actual ideas that have some esoteric, you know, lineage. Instead, they're going to show a bunch of people skinny dipping at Bimini or fucking hanging out in the pyramid meditating, and then they're going to laugh at it, right? They're going to put it in the most humorous light possible. So we end up with a spot where unfortunately, the vast majority of this stuff, that stuff just doesn't get treated even remotely as viable or as reasonable. And I mean, it is hard to be empirical or to be data driven when it comes to that sort of thing. But I always circle back to Carl Sagan, man, because that dude was fucking brilliant when it came to that stuff. You watch the movie Contact or read the book. And most people have seen the movie and not read the book. But when Jodie Foster at the end, she goes through the little ball and sees her dad and talks to the alien out in space and all that shit. And it was just a few seconds of her, you know, has split second of her falling. And the only evidence is the, you know, grainy, staticky footage that goes on and on and on, which could well just be a computer glitch of some sort, a technological bug. Basically, she has a trust me, bro. And all of that evidence-driven, faith-based shit at the end of the day, you don't like my personal experience, you don't believe me, hop in the fucking ball and go yourself, or don't. It's up to you, yeah, man. As I say, I love the fact that Sagan realized that we are... Yes, the way forward to learning things is generally speaking evidence driven and stuff. This is how we eliminate outliers and people's opinions become... We can reconcile the ones that are accurate and the ones that aren't. But if we don't keep that core of humanity, you know, think about all the horror stories of AI and how it always revolves around it just not having that emotional core that we can't really quite put our finger on. But that's really, it's just that pure cold logic scares the fuck out of us for a reason. We know what it means.
I've even noticed, I think, with yourself, from the first time I met you, you seem to even be more open, I think, to the esoteric being looked at with some of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's, well, as I've done more and more and more research and seen how a lot of these things get lumped in together, like, I'm having a hard time remembering the guy's name. He did a lot of work on the 2012 Mayan prophecy thing. John Major Jenkins, he's calling me. John Major Jenkins. And he was his work was maligned by John Hoop so bad, like horribly. And they were basically made him out to be like this. He was predicting the end of the world based on the 2012 calendar thing, right? This is doomsday. And that's not what he said. He was talking about a change in like this esoteric spiritual thing that he personally believed was true. But the fact, I mean, it doesn't matter if you believe it's true or not. Like if the Mayans believed it's true, that's the research that you're doing, which goes into the research of esotericism. I mean, I've said this one a bunch. It's like when people are like, oh, these guys just run around eating mushrooms and you look at these things and try to interpret stuff. It's like, you know, we know for a fact the guys that designed these fucking edifices were high as fuck on mushrooms. So you're going to, how are you going to interpret it without them, buddy? What fucking lens are you going to use? It's going to put you in that same, where are you going to find the machine elves, right? It's like, yeah. So anyway, it's I do find that it should be. I do find that hard line gets used too often to just push things out that don't deserve it.
Yeah, I also think that the esoteric is. I think the term itself lends much to be understood as in it's a select few for a reason. And so for something like this to go mainstream, it will never do that because of consciousness of what my understanding actually hides itself for a reason, which is how you find truth and why Heidegger is so important in his understanding of what he was trying to do with ancient philosophy, with people like Parmenides and Heraclitus, with the terms like what aletheia means, truth. Truth then mean he's using the term aletheia because it means unconcealedness. You bring something into the clearing and it becomes unconcealed to you. And so it then changes paradigms as an individual, which is why only a select few are able to go through these things. And so it's really fascinating to me when the conversation is shut down, when first off, it needs to be understood that we can have an exoteric conversation of what we think the empirical evidence shows, but then amongst ourselves on chats like this, or in our own little mystery schools in the darkness of our own homes, it's really important that we then can talk about the symbols and what the actual underpinning of the philosophical understanding of the Egyptians at that time and what the Osirian mysteries actually meant, or what Akhenaten was trying to do when he changed things into a monotheistic culture through time. You know, there's just, it's a fascinating thing. I think we forget esoteric means select few, I guess is my main point. And that's point to be understood, especially because I do follow the Gnostic informant a lot, and I think he's such a fascinating character because he himself forgets what Gnosis means, and Gnosis isn't for the masses. Gnosis is for a select few who choose to dare to will to know and to remain silent in their actions.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what I think though too, besides like a select few, I think if let's say I'm somewhat right on my experience, and if that's what's needed for a magical experience, nobody's going to fucking go for that anyway.
Yeah. Well, explain more, Nick.
I'll go for an NDE, sure.
Right.
Or like, right. I'll do flatliners. Nobody would fucking do that.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, just think that not everybody's going to get it anyway.
Yeah.
Very self-selective.
It's also, and what we're seeing with these NDEs, not even that, but then the psychedelic experience, which is having you go through a near-death experience if you take enough, right? If you take the heroic dosages, as we're seeing, people can do that and still not understand it and get locked out of these experiences. So it's an interesting, like, not even, like, I've taken psychedelics with people and I am the only one who made it out alive. And I don't mean that physically, but a lot of people got left behind and then they didn't fall into the mystical and magical realms. And so, again, I think there's a lot more to be said about the metempsychosis, the transmigration of the soul, as Plato talks about through his understanding of what it takes to then practice and try to get back to these things, which is then, I think, like these landmarks seem to be things that are there so we can remember what it means to go into the dark night of the soul and try to transmute our experiences if we can read the symbols correctly. And so I don't know. I think that's it's a fascinating topic. And I think it's only an infinite regression of a conversation if we're trying to continually see things through only empirical concrete lens. That's myself.
No, we definitely need things outside of empiricism. So sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say one more thing before I was going to turn it back to you, Dan. I was going to say, and if I could be wrong, but I do think like a lot of Egyptian stuff, even like hieroglyphics, are depicting its death, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Oh, no, it is for sure. But then, Nick, it's about what does death mean?
And yeah, well, I was thinking before when you said if we understood them that death better through their eyes, I think that would make a huge difference. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I like that. And I agree. And that's why things like Thoth and like Hermes the thrice great. Well, why is he thrice great? Because he was born and he died and then was reborn again. And then, you know, and so it's like my understanding of what is going on in like, say, the Great Pyramid and these different things is that you're simulating death either physically or psychologically and spiritually. And so it's not to die actually of this meat suit, but it's to make sure that you go through a psychological death rebirth and then you can lift yourself into a higher state of consciousness and be and sacrifice your old self for the new self, this new priest king, that Thoth type of ideal. That's how I see it, at least. I mean, because if you die of the physical body, you have to redo it, type of thing. And so not everybody can make the NDE back into the body and then continue to use this. I'd rather not be reborn as a baby. I like my body, so I want to continue.
You're putting your finger directly on the reason that science has a real problem with it, like with esotericism, because as soon as you get into inherent belief in the soul, right? Inherent belief in some form of more than us to meet. I mean, most scientists are going to reject that on a fundamental level, right? They're going to say that our brain is the seed of a consciousness. And so with that in mind, it becomes really difficult. It's like, well, let's put in these tests to test and see if the pyramid does raise consciousness. And they're immediately laughing at this. So it's like this to them, it's not even worth doing. And so we end up in this spot where, and then the people that are interested in it by and large aren't going to follow the scientific process. And this is like psychology. It's going to be self-reported, right? We have problems with self-reporting. Like I doubt the people that visited that island told their shrinks that they have this thing for kids, but this is the fucking, so the numbers weren't right. So
that's good.
Self-reporting is problematic, but at the same time there's more to the human condition than just simply being logical beings. Again, it's horrible if you think about that, just being purely logical and stuff. So it is, to me, it's worth looking into these things from other angles and other perspectives. But I guess the best way of putting it is that quote from what's that dude that wrote all that Call of Cthulhu shit?
H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, H.P. Lovecraft. He's got that quote that says, "I don't need to believe in Santa Claus to know that people exchange gifts on December 25th." I don't need to believe that the ancient Egyptians had anything going on with all of their beliefs and spiritual stuff to study it. You don't have to be a Christian to be a theologian, right? So
yeah, yeah.
Ritual artifact, right? That's the term that they use all the time. Ritual. What does that mean?
VHS tapes will be ritual artifacts in the future.
Yeah.
Isn't it fascinating how we don't want to look at the lens of the things like this? Not the great we doesn't want to look at the Sphinx and the pyramids from the lens of what the mythologies are telling us that the Egyptians believed. You know, it's like, why not understand it that they believe that there was life after death, and not even that they thought that life after death was more real than this life, which is why Plato talked about the forms being just what they were, because he himself went there and studied with the priestcraft of that time, went through the mystery schools, which were not out in the open because of it was going into a dark period.
He waited like 20 some odd years to even get in.
Exactly. And so it's like, why are we trying to view it through a scientific materialist lens when that's not how those things were created in the first place?
That's it's a very real, very steady problem that you've seen with archaeology for forever. I did a video on the East Wenatchee Clovis site, which is it's got a bunch of really big Clovis points, and they're like expensive ones, and they were all reburied and put back in the ground, and that the whole deal with that site. The Native Americans and the archaeologists are squaring off. The archaeologists are like, hey, man, this is something from, 10,000 years ago. This could tell us a lot about how the people came to the Americas and stuff. And then you've got the Native American guy going, buddy, we came, and there's a newspaper articles with it. Buddy, we came out of the fucking caves. We don't need you guys to tell us about our history, about our past. We know where we came from, and this is bullshit. Get out of our backyard. You get archaeology is very much has always had this just inherent, skepticism of mythology all across the board. It's just like there is no myths do not contain a kernel of truth kind of attitude. It's like,
which is so nonsense.
Which is so nonsense. But I do get where if say you're studying the Ark of the Covenant, I can understand why somebody studying that is a lot more skeptical of the claim of it having bread from heaven or taking down the walls of Jericho than they are of it being made out of wood and gold, right? That's one of the things, again, what I like about Matt. He's always assigning things probability. He's just like, I'm not sure about this, I'm not sure about that, but I give this like a 1% chance, which is what he gave the Sphinx, by the way. Matt Bell, the guy that interviewed Filippo on the second Sphinx, he gives it about a 1% chance of being real. But anyway, I think that there's a very frustrating reality that of human psyches separating itself and looking at other people with a lot of disdain nowadays. And we got where we are conquering the planet using what we bring to the table as a community. And a great example of this that I like to use a lot is when Albert Einstein came up with the theory of relativity, E=mc². And about 9 years later or so, he has a quote saying, I can barely understand the theory of relativity anymore now that the mathematicians have gotten hold of it. E=mc² isn't what split the atom. It's the basis, it's the foundation, but it took a whole lot more fucking work to get there. You had a dreamer that was good, he's smart, but you also had the methodical cocksucker that's just in there, nope, that won't work, nope, fuck you. And at the end of the day, you end up, these two can work together. How did we get the carbon dating on the Great Pyramids done? The Edgar Cayce Foundation that wanted to see a 10,000-year-old thing hired a couple of Egyptologists, fucking Zahi Hawass and Mark Lenner, the two biggest skeptics on the planet, right? Put them, they married together, and at the end of the day, we got new data. Ta-da! Now, they pissed all over it afterwards, but again, that goes back to this, just give them an inch, we'll take a mile kind of mentality that's taken over discourse ever since social media became a thing.
Well, here's a different angle. What if, back to the whole idea of esotericism, what if these symbols do represent a type of power structure? And unless you've got the symbols in place, that power structure becomes in question. So we're constantly looking at this from outside and not understanding what these symbols really mean to the inner core of the esotericists. Meanwhile, there might have been a whole different head on top of that Sphinx, thousands of years ago. And what did that mean to them versus what this new one means now? So, we don't really have the keys, but I think that could be part of why things haven't changed in so many years, is because it kind of represents a lineage almost.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Yeah, overturning the work of your forefathers in these regards is something that you can't do if you're not in the field, man. But you can, but they're not going to like it. And so, it's up to them to refine things. I mean, I get it all the time because I challenge these dudes. I get it all the time in my comments. What are your credentials? I can read a book and I can read a paper and I can do basic math. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, this is all that you have to do to evaluate these things. It's not like they're written in jargon nobody can comprehend. I got Google right here. If I don't know a word because I'm too dumb, I'll press a button and find out. But it's not complicated. but they don't want you to. It's honestly so one of the funniest things about social media is it really has pulled back the veil on science, not science itself so much as the scientists. But it shows that you know the body's got a problem because the individual cells are often corrupt, and it depends on the field of study. But archaeology, I mean, archaeology started out because a bunch of dudes that collected artifacts wanted a way to catalog them. It's like if they were collecting a bunch of video games, they want to know which one came out first and which variants went where. And so they start doing all their research. And that's where archaeology came from. They wanted to know which vase went where on the timeline, who made what. And that's the origins. And even 100 years ago, they were running around looting the shit out of Native American stuff to no end. And it's actually done like in some ways cultural damage that, I mean, it's the kind of thing that always happens, but for it to happen at the hands of the people that are claiming to be safeguarding it is ridiculous. Like the Kachina dolls, for example, are a Navajo thing where they make those. And the old ones were very esoteric. They were symbolic. They represented specific gods. They were used for specific purposes. But then all these white dudes start buying them up and like, oh, these poor noble savages. Oh my God. And next thing you know, it's fucking Kachina dolls look like a Warhammer 40,000 miniature, but just scaled up. They're all painted and detailed and all this. They're made to go on a white dude's shelf. And ain't got fuck all to do with the original purpose anymore. And that, again, this happens all the time, but these were the goddamn archaeologists doing it, the anthropologists, the people whose job it is to safeguard it. So this is so frustratingly... They are trying so hard to represent themselves as a science and to portray themselves as a legit field of study because they know what they really are is a bunch of fucking collectors and that are just trying to, we have historians. Historians aren't so stupid as to try to call themselves scientists. They both use artifacts. They both cite carbon dating and all kinds of different science. Historians are not dumbasses and they don't say, oh, we're scientists because they know better. Fucking archaeologist just puts on a sombrero or a fucking fedora. It's like, oh yeah, scientist is bullshit. They LARP and they know it and they hate it. They're well aware of it.
Deep seated insecurity.
You project, right? If this is why the racism thing comes up all the time. They're like, oh, this guy from 1880 was racist and he was a white supremacist. It's like, yeah, like all the dudes in 1880 were fucking white supremacists. I don't know what to tell you. What were the archaeologists doing in 1880? Or you can look at what they're up to today. You've got NAGPRA violations all over the place. It's like these guys are supposed to have repatriated bones 35 years ago, and they still got them. Dartmouth University, they got in trouble a few years ago for using Native American bones as teaching aids in class. Ones that were supposed to not even be in their hands anymore. And they're not just like got them on a shelf somewhere. Some dude's like, hey, check out the actual fuck. So tell me how terrible we are because some dude 100 years ago said some shit. It's like, dude, this is that proverbial thing Jesus said about you take the damn telephone pole out your eye and then come take the speck out of mine, but fix your own, clean your own fucking house, bud. Yeah, I just quoted Jesus and said fuck at the same time. Sorry. That's all
right. Sure, it's done all the time on this show.
Hey, I want to say thanks to Nick for gifting out a bunch of channel memberships, you stud. Thank you.
Yeah, I saw that. Very nice one. What was that spot that Headless you brought up before?
The stuff on the Hawara.
Yeah.
So you got the Bent Pyramid, right? And then in front of that, supposedly, is this massive underground labyrinth complex. And, you know, it played a huge role in ancient classical history. And I guess they found some sort of scans that showed that there was an underground complex there and they're not excavating. I heard that it was specifically because it was flooded out because of the dam. But I don't know if that's true or not. But, you know, even if it was, you could pump that water out and still find out all these keys to the ancient world. But, you know, it wasn't just the Hawara underground complex that had a death penalty associated with revealing the secrets there. It was also the Eleusinian mystery schools. So we're talking about unearthing stuff from ancient Western history that comes along with, you know, death if you reveal it. So there could be a lot of that sort of same power dynamic surviving in the West. And, you know, it could be at these conferences too. Who knows?
Yeah. The, you know, in Cusco, the labyrinth that they just found, you know, they've known about this for over 100 years. They shit on a scientist about 20 years ago, a scientist, because he was attached to the Catholic Church, and he was coming in saying, hey, there's a labyrinth under there, and we found it with this ground-penetrating radar. They told him he was crazy. Brian Forrester's got videos of it from 10 years ago. You could go 50 years ago and hire a guide for, you know, $2, and he'd run you around under the place, right? This was well-documented by Garcilaso de la Vega. I'm sure I pronounced that name perfectly. He was a Spanish Inca guy. He was like a descendant of an Incan royalty mom and a Spanish conquistador father. And so his accounts are the best that we have from that time. And he describes the tunnels as like so scary that people tie a rope to go in, and they're frightening. Well, it takes 100 years after, you know, 500 years from then before we finally find them. And then, you know, 20 years after one scientist is screaming, here they are, mainstream academia is like, okay, yeah, right, here they are. I mean, I'm skeptical, or maybe I'm just cynical, but there ain't no fucking way. They were just stealing shit out of there. They were looting it. They were taking every goddamn thing that ain't nailed down, anything that might be interesting, run metal detectors through there, the whole nine yards, and then they're like, okay, yeah, open to the public. We got every shred of everything. Knock yourselves out. Check out this cool tunnel. Let's get some more money.
Yeah.
I mean, those cover-ups, like with Paracas, you know, the skulls down there, Rockefeller bought four of them in the 30s, paid $40,000. He displayed them in the Met. He displayed them in the National History Museum in New York City. And he repatriated them, apparently, to Peru later on. And, well, the Peruvian government, they don't know which ones they are. You know, they just, oh, we just jumble fuck those in with the rest of the skulls. Who knows? Photographs of them being displayed in the Met or the National History Museum are non-existent. Photographs of those skulls are non-existent. You can't see. When there's like 600 or so bundles, if memory serves, down in Peru of these graves with elongated skulls, these grave bundles, Rockefeller cherry-picked four. Those are the four I want to see. Those are the four I can't see. And they're trying to, the idea that they were jumbled back in with the rest is bullshit. I think what happened was they never left New York City. They probably just ended up in other collectors' hands. Like, Rockefeller's like, we're going to repatriate these. And so they're just like, send them. Or maybe Rockefeller just fucking kept them and pretended that it, one way or another, there's some fuckery going on. And this happens so often with just anything that's interesting or cool, that when it really gets to the point where you're like, I wonder what's going on with that. Sorry, can't look a second time, buddy. Nothing to see here. Even the cocaine mummies, they won't let anybody access them a second time. It's like this, so you end up with the skeptics going, well, you know, if they won't let us look a second time, God damn it, everything.
Very true. And it's gone. You know, it's that old meme. But it seems like any supernatural object gets treated with supernatural irresponsibility. It's like, how could you be that stupid? Well, maybe that was the point.
Exactly. It's so frustrating too. You see the more supernatural it is, the less likely it is to be treated with any sort of actual reverence or anything cool at all. It's frustrating, but it's indicative of the kind of way they look at. I mean, the term pyramidiate, which I love that term, but it's, you know, it's very insulting, and it's old, man. It's been around for like 100 years. They've been calling people pyramidiate a very long time, so. They don't. Again, we got those. To go back to the Einstein metaphor, we got our dreamers and our skeptics are no longer holding hands and seeing kumbaya in any meaningful sense at all. And so this is humanity basically cutting its brain in half. It's like, let the artists do their thing and let the skeptics do theirs. And it's like, well, that's not how we conquered this planet, is it? That's not how we got man on the moon, is it? We had some dreamers like, fuck, you would be cool if we put some dumbass up on that rock. And then he gets skeptics like, oh, fuck me. Really? This is what I got to figure out now? Okay.
Right. Right. But, you know, that's sort of the goal is, if you could limit the imagination, then you don't have to go out there and dig this stuff up. And you don't have to question these long-held beliefs and all the rest of this stuff that sort of bolsters the power structure as it sits in place today. So I think... your work with the elongated skulls from up in the north east, or northwest was really fascinating. I remember watching your presentation at that conference, just sitting on the edge of my seat. I'm like, I had no idea they had elongated skulls up there. I'm sure everybody else doesn't either, but you know, this was like a widespread Pacific Rim type, you know, all the way up and down the coast. They had this sort of head binding or elongated skull tradition. So,
yeah, it was all around the coast, and this is being removed from history right now too. I think I've got them on the computer. If I pull them up, they straight up have deleted a lot of these, the map side of these things on the maps. They are deleting the things as we speak. Basically, it's happening in real time, and it's really frustrating because, sorry, I'm trying to find this at the same time. It's like, if you look for, maybe I don't have it on my desktop. Sorry. Here's one. Yes. Okay. This right here is a more modern one. This is a map of the distribution of artificial cranial deformation. And this was done, that map right there was done in like 2016. And as you can see, okay, the people in the Americas is that red line. All those orange spots are places where artificial cranial deformation is a thing, right? And this map is like way, way, way less detailed than the one from 1936 or so. So much less detail. And this happens, like Hawaii, for example, on that one's been removed, where Hawaii is well known. I mean, if you could Google it right now, and it'll tell you that Hawaii is one of the places that you'll find elongated skulls from. Yeah, I don't have the other one on my desktop right now. Sorry. The Niue is another one where if you look at the island of Niue, it's considered, you look it on Google and it'll say, oh no, there is no elongated skulls that have ever been on the island of Niue. But then if you like start doing some reading and stuff, you'll find out that not only were there elongated skulls there, there was one that was 96% as wide as it is tall. Which, I mean, that's some Stewie Griffith looking shit right there, if you think about it. And what? No pictures of it available. No pictures at all. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I've got, it's insane. It's like, it's insane just how, yeah. Okay. Here we got, the island of Niue, where it says that we do. This is a skull at 90 CI of 96.3 is the percentage, basically 96% as wide as it is tall. And if you go and look through, go on Gemini and look on there, well, you'll find that there is no artificially modified soles coming from Niue. And if you take it, and the reason is it's not crawling that page, but if you take a screenshot of that page and then put it on your phone, and your fucking phones, they all crawl it just fine. The maps are being reduced. The amount of people, the places where it's happened is being reduced. The internet's slowly erasing these things, and access to photographs or even drawings are gone. And it's fuckery. I don't even know how to put it. You look at how widespread it was all across the coastal regions. It's like, well, gee, ancient seafaring civilization, anyone? I mean, it seems so patently obvious, and that's why they have to. And I don't know why they care. I really don't know why they care that much about some ancient skulls, but they sure as fuck do.
Yeah, what do you think it is with obviously something with location, if it's always on the coast, right?
I think it was, I mean, that, yeah, it's, they were in contact. I mean, yeah, that would be the first thing, right?
Something is bump
around the coast. I mean, if you bump around the coast of the world, it's not going to be that hard to circumnavigate the globe besides fighting with people along the way. It's, if you stay on the coast, you do all right for the most part.
That's a good point.
I mean, it's how they think the Americas, if you've ever heard of the kelp highway hypothesis. It's basically that they came, instead of crossing the Bering Land Bridge to get to the Americas, they just jumped down the coast with boats. And that's why you've got stuff down in New Mexico 30,000 years old and South America 30,000 years ago, because they it's a lot easier to travel by boat than it is overland. So what would have taken thousands of years by overland migration can be done in 20 years through boat.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else with the elongated skulls that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, there's the amount of structures that you see alongside of them is quite often compelling. It's telling. It's like you see these megalithic architecture quite often, not always, but quite often in places where they are. And then you get up to the Americas and you don't see those megaliths, but there's rumors, man. You talk to the old timers around here and they tell you stories that their dads told them and stuff. And there's all kinds of goofy things that I'm going to go check it out. Like one area for sure. There's three areas that I want to have access to next time I go. One of them is an area where it looks like there was an old structure and stuff. Local paintings and stuff show this structure, and then a Google satellite image shows that there's a square left there. So we're going to go check that out. There's also supposedly a bunch of ancient tunnels under the town of Longview. So some of that, it might just be people confusing, you know, infrastructure and bomb shelters. Who knows? So, but I've got potentially got access to those. So, and then the one other thing that I'm going to check out next time I'm over there, which I'm so skeptical of, but we'll see if it pans out. Somebody's claiming that they know where Mel's Hole is. If any of you guys have ever heard of Mel's Hole. So every time anybody ever goes to look for it, they always come back and say, fucking, I don't know, man. I don't think it's real. So I'm going to go take a look. We'll see if this is just, you know, somebody wants to get on my channel for 15 minutes and then I'll have to dig a hole to shove them in if that's the case. But if not, hey, I created, what's your name? It's fucking Mel now, because that's Mel's Hole. But yeah, we'll see. And the megalithic stuff, the markings, like you guys probably know the candelabra of the Andes, that big big ground. It's like the Nazca lines, except for a geoglyph. There's a word. It looks like a candelabra, right? And kind of like a burning stick, and it's huge. And it's visible from about 12 miles out to sea, and it's like 5 miles from where those skulls were all located in Paracas. So if you assume that there was connection between this culture, that like I showed you on the map where they could have been jumping all over the place, that candelabra is a pretty good, you know, old school kind of lighthouse. Hey, guys, park your weird skulled asses over here and we'll trade, right? So a lot of those kinds of things I end up looking at and thinking that, you know, we have signs even now with DNA. It's so funny because when the first ancient apocalypse comes out, all the skeptics are like, well, you need DNA to prove any of this. And now it's like Easter Island has DNA from South America. No question. There's Polynesian DNA in South America and there's South American DNA in Polynesia. These guys knew each other. They might not have known each other all the time, but they definitely were in contact enough that we can find traces of it today. So, you know, we really need to look at things a lot differently. You know, Thor Heyerdahl was demonized for implying that there was a connection between South America and Easter Island. And now it's like that's standard archaeological accepted scientific fact.
Mm. It reminds me of something Headless and Ricardo and I have been discussing, mainly at Ricardo's direction, on how that there's this massive amount of copper that couldn't have been mined from the old world. That had to, seemingly, one could deduce that there was so much copper that a lot of it had to have come from the new world, and that they've spent a lot of time hiding connections of seafaring groups, maybe because of the restriction on resources and the you know, benefit that one can get by having this knowledge of where to get the copper and so forth. So I wonder if that is maybe connected to maybe why they might want to eliminate the idea of seafaring groups.
That may well be it. Could well be associated. The copper mining stuff is always interesting to me because it's one of those situations where you'll see them make all these estimates. You've got, you know, modern geologists that will make massive estimates on, you know, what came out of the hole in the ground and yada yada. But then you start asking questions like how much copper, and it's like, well, we don't know well enough to say whether or not how much copper came out of the New World. We don't really know enough to say a whole lot, and they get really vague with it. Because I looked into that when I did my video on the copper culture, and I was surprised that, like, the debunking of it is pretty much non-existent.
Weak.
Yeah,
it's super weak.
It is. It's super weak. And there's the real problem there. It's like some of those artifacts, to me, like when I look at some of those artifacts, I see clear like Mesoamerican influence, and that's accepted in certain parts. Like you go down to the south, they'll say, oh yeah, these ones are probably part of West Virginia and those mountains. Oh yeah, these were probably part of, you know, influenced by Mesoamerican stuff. And then it's like, okay, but you look at the similarities between this conical mound where they buried a bunch of dudes in it with one central burial, like a royalty, then like the Mexican pyramids, which they'll tell you were ceremonial centers, but most of them also had one royal burial in the center of them. And then in the old world, where a lot of the pyramids were used for burials as well, it's like, I mean, yeah, you can say that pyramids are just the easiest way to stack rocks, but why is it that everybody wants to stack rocks on top of their body instead of burying it underneath? It gets attached to very specific ideas about the soul, to return to what Brandon was saying, which again is why I think the esoteric stuff has value. Even if you don't believe in any of the spiritual aspects of it, you can see the connections. You can understand where somebody else is coming from. And these connections are across the world. There is clear connections across the world in iconography and in ideology. So, they don't want to deal with that. I don't know if it comes from old school racism, and then they just, like in the modern day, they just don't, you know, they don't want to completely refine the old framework. Because, I mean, if you read the papers from 150, 200 years ago, it quite often, there, what's the evidence for this rock being from a Viking origin? Well, dumb engine can't carve rock. That's the whole fucking argument. It's like, what the fuck? These guys are over here making arrowheads out of rock, and you don't think they could scratch a line on one? What the fuck is wrong with you people? And that was that's quite possible that that's where all this stuff came from. It's like this whole, the idea of these people being separated, and they couldn't have possibly had giants. They're people taller than us. They couldn't have possibly helped inform the Bronze Age. Are you kidding? These guys were over there in butt flaps. We were having the Bronze Age. They're backwards. So they're heathens. So yeah, I think that's quite possible.
I think if you look at the formation of the country and you look at how obsessed the founding fathers were with mounds, digging them up, finding artifacts within them, and then what do we find? Oh, a farmer dug one up and it's got this certificate of ownership in the middle of this mound. So, you know, if you look at the Scythians and their burial grounds, that was their holy site. That was their holy property. And when you think of all of these mounds as being markers of holy property, then it gets into a real estate debate. And they don't want to have that real estate debate. So they're not digging these things up to find out what's really in them, because if you do that, you might find the owners. And you don't want to do that. So, you know, they're not going to be passing on this land to anybody else. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. They've destroyed the ones that they destroyed, like, so many of them, it's ridiculous. Like St. Louis was known as Mound City originally, and they just raised them all, just flattened it all out. But by the time you get over here to the West Coast, when a lot of these places were being settled and stuff in the early 1900s, a lot of these cities were being built. There was already laws against, you couldn't just go in and destroy a Native American site like you could 100 years before, even 50 years before. So a lot of these sites were protected, and as a result of that, it's one of that disconnect that white collar folk often have from the blue collar world. Oh, you know, we'll pass this law and it's going to stop people from, you know, destroying indigenous sites. It's like, no, it's going to facilitate it. I'll give you a perfect example. If you're, I have a friend that worked in a mine in Tennessee, worked in a I think it was a coal mine even, but he was told if he saw arrowheads, any artifacts, you just put it in your fucking pocket and get it out of there because they'll shut the whole goddamn operation down. So same kind of thing here. It's like there's areas where there's one spot that I, Native Americans had about 3,000 elongated skull burials on it when Lewis and Clark came through. And then a dude came through about 10 years later, and when he came through, his men had a camping fire that accidentally burnt the place, and he lost all those burials and stuff. They're just gone now. And then a gravel company slowly mined that thing away, and everybody was trying to buy it from them. They wouldn't sell it. Oh, we got this quality basalt here, and there's basalt all over the region. It's fallen off the hills. But they raised it all the way to the ground, and you can't even still go stand where that thing was now. And if you look at pictures of it, it looks kind of like Ganong Padang, how it's like natural, but parts of it look artificial, like modified. And so, again, you know, I think that by the time people got over here and anything that they saw, that the laws were going to stand between them, they just get rid of it and then carry on. But, you know, that it's one of those, you know, like, again, you pass a law, it's going to change everything, right? Like, no, it changes nothing. It actually makes it worse.
Yeah. To add on to kind of what you guys were just saying about how they come in and they shut shit down when they find things like arrowheads and things like that. I'm not going to tell you where I'm at, but what's nearby me is an area where they've dug a bunch of shit up, and they have found not only tons of old arrowheads, but they've also found old bison that are they're extinct and been extinct for thousands of years that they know of, as well as they've found old cooking sites. And what is it called? The hearth, old hearths. One of them is from 1500 years ago, and the other one is from 3000 years ago that they've dated that back to. And the army rangers, the military, they come in and they took all that shit and they just left, and they didn't bring it up to anybody in my area. And the reason I know about it is because I know how to make people talk. And so it's one of those fascinating things to hear it said. And I'm all like, are you kidding? They're like, don't tell anybody. And so I'm like, I'm not telling anybody right now. But it's one of those fascinating things that it's like, they'll just come in and just take it. And it's not even like a community can talk about these things to be all like, hey, we think that you're taking this from like farmland and different lands. Like, why? The whole community should know that now you found bison that are extinct in our area, as well as arrowheads and old herds, not just one, but two, that are not just hundreds of years old, but thousands of years old. And then nobody knows about it. So like, that's a small area that I live in. Extrapolate that to the fucking world. And now we understand that there is so much hidden shit that they're just taking and locking away. To do what with? I don't, you know, like, I have my own conspiracy theories on what they're doing with these things and why. But it's just, I'm just adding to the conversation about, I completely agree. And it's like, arrowheads are one thing, but like herds and extinct bison that no one's talking about, it makes me irate. And not only that, but then you can go into, I've talked to these people that are around this area that are working on this area, but add the skinwalker ideas to this thing, that people are seeing skinwalkers, and this isn't just like white man sees skinwalker afraid, it's actual indigenous people around here who are working on these sites who are like, no, they don't get out of their fucking cars and their pickups. They actually will only speak through their telephones because they've seen shit in these areas that they're unwilling to now get out of their vehicles at night in certain areas because of insert skinwalker here. And so it's the world is far stranger than anybody ever wants to understand.
Oh yeah. And here in the States, you know, if they find something that they want to cover up in the States, it's gotten a lot harder than it used to be because of the ubiquity of phones and stuff. But, you know, traditionally here in the States, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers or something, they come in and in secret, whatever it was, way, according to, you know, the reports. But
That's it.
Overseas.
Yeah, nice. The Army of Engineers. You're right.
Corps of Engineers, yep. But you go overseas to most of the places, or even here in the South America, most of the places where the cool shit is are so fucking poor. I mean, if you look at what they bought the Dead Sea Scrolls for, it's like basically cheaper than you could have bought a nuke for at the end of the Cold War, man. I mean, it was nothing, like nothing. And it's the same thing with Sir Flinders Petrie. He was buying so many artifacts that he started limiting himself to like 30 scarabs a year, because he was buying, his first year was like 1,300 or something like that. People were just bringing him artifact. As soon as those dudes started showing up with money, and you got this poor third world country and a bunch of first world rich motherfuckers, they start throwing that money around, and every single person that knew any place that any of these artifacts might have been started looking, digging. And so Providence, Schmovidence, that's fucking toast. They just sold the stuff. And again, archaeologists are a bunch of fucking antiquarians. That's really what they are. And this, but yeah, so anyway, the secret stuff, always easy to, you know where the Baghdad battery is right now, right? Yeah, me neither. It was stolen in 2003 when the U.S. Army comes in and kicks the shit out of Iraq. Yeah. There was the rumor is a bunch of Alphabet boys went into the museum. It was just like, that's this, and this. But who knows? It very well could have been anybody. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a top-down thing. All it would have had to have been was one rich dude say, hey, I want the Baghdad battery and steal some other shit too, so nobody knows exactly why, but just steal some. You take all that. I'll give you $100,000. No problem.
In a lot of in a lot of ways, the blue collar communities and these poorer communities don't realize how not standing up for these antiquities and actually getting their, you know, transparency that they deserve leads to a lot more land management issues. Because once they can start getting away with just spiriting things away in the middle of the night, they're going to come for your land as well. They're going to do that to you guys as well. It's not just limited to the things you find in the ground. It's also the ground itself. And we're seeing massive pressures being put on rural communities based off of that reality.
You nailed it, Headless. That's exactly it. Attached to what I just talked about in my area, they are doing that exact thing to a lot of old families that have lived on their rural farms for a very long time. And because of certain groups of individuals and families that have more money in the area want that land to do this thing, now all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, we're actually going to buy that from you because you know what? You don't own it, because that title, deed of title, is not actually applicable to actually owning this area, and we can take it whenever we want. And these families have gotten kicked out of their land just because of wanting to do whatever it is that they want to do in that area, you know, and then get federal grants because of it's going to make things better, you know, whatever that means.
Right.
Oh, that's how the trees ended up on Göbekli Tepe. Was the guy, they were taking it, the government's like, we're going to buy your land. And he's like, oh, shit. Well, you know what? They pay X dollars per acre for desert. You know how much they pay per acre for an orchard? More. Plant some trees. Seriously, that's exactly how it went down. And then they have to turn around and root all the trees out. So, yeah, man, a lot of times these things have such like people a lot of times look at these really like overarching influence things and stuff on it. And I understand why, but a lot of times the impact can be just like right in your face on a basic level. Like when I was in Scottsdale in December, we were, one of the questions when I was on the panel with a bunch of guys from Ancient Aliens and stuff and a bunch of cooler people than me. And the question is, why do you think that they haven't looked into the that hidden chamber in the Great Pyramid? Why hasn't that been excavated yet? And the answers that are coming before me was things like, you know, the government has already looted all the stuff out of there. They've already got the technology that there was to be taken, yada, yada. And by the time it gets to me, I point out that Zahi Hawass said that, you know, that no matter what bad is happening in Egypt, those New Age people, they will come. He's talking about Arab Spring and the loss of tourism revenue and how the Pyramidians just didn't give a fuck. They just kept showing up anyway. If you say, like, worst case scenario potentially to him is if they, you know, open up that chamber and they find a body of a pharaoh in there, now all those Atlantis bros are not going to show up anymore in his mind, right? And so it's this goose that laid the golden egg scenario. This thing right now is making my country all kinds, fucking almost 10% of their GDP when things are going well. So yeah, you don't want to, why threaten that goose? Just let it keep laying eggs. Just let it keep laying eggs.
Strategic ambiguity. It's the best selling point in the world.
It works. Oh man, sorry, I got my eyelash or something got in my eye. Now I'm crying about stuff like I'm Flint Dibble after the debate.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, I think it's fascinating how we're talking on these like small levels and big levels of like people taking things and not telling other people about it. But then you get on these massive levels. Just think about, again, like you just said, what is all the shit that they're taking and not telling us about the pyramids, about the Sphinx, about all these things? And then about what's going on with like, okay, we're getting this information about these structures underneath the Sphinx and underneath the pyramids and these things. But it's all about what is in the unconscious mind of the human psyche is the same thing as what's in the unconscious mind of our history. And then where are these things going? We know the Vatican has massive archives, you know, where most of the things went with the fall of the libraries of Alexandria, as well as then when they went in there and raided the pyramids and the Sphinxes. And so it's like, it's a fallacy in and of itself to think that what we're getting is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So it's like, why is it so outrageous then to add the esoteric, the mythological, and the symbolic understanding of these things? It's only outrageous because that then we have to change our society as a whole and how we understand how to live as a human, because then they can't get us chasing in this bread and circus rat race about weapons of mass destruction here or there and what the Somalis are doing, these pirates in these places. And, you know, like all this bread and circuses is wild when it comes down to it, that right now Palantir is building a whole grid system around us. So then you don't ever ask these questions as a robot named Plato is going to teach our kids in all the schools. And so it's like this fascinating meta-analysis of trying to understand what's going on in our ancient past when it's continually being rewritten at all times. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. You said a lot of things there. Definitely you've seen our past rewritten in real time. There's no question there. Again, the esoteric stuff can get a lot tougher to incorporate on a scientific level, because you've got, to use the classic atheist argument is, whose God do we go with, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you take and ask 500 people in our community what they think the pyramids were used for, you're going to get about 350 different answers. So coming in with esoterica and similar, you know, anything that's spiritual is going to put itself in a spot that isn't, isn't falsifiable, isn't verifiable, and therefore will always be subject to endless debates, right? And that faith-based thing, again, it's like, so you're going to, these guys are never going to want to invest in that. Now, as far as the bread and circuses shit goes, yeah, I don't think that's ever going to stop as long as humans are in a meat suit. It's part of the human condition. We have this ability to see lofty, to dream of perfection and to imagine a world with no pain and no sin and no whatever. But then we, you know, go take a dump and have to eat something that used to walk. And then, man, she's kind of hot too. We do all these things that are just so basic that at the same time, it gets very difficult for humans to move past things. Like, and we are easily distracted. Like, all they have to do in order to demonize an entire movement. Like I mentioned it when I was on Rogan that, you know, how the internet feeds us the most interesting, the craziest stuff, the most outlandish. The transgender people that are working at Subway and just making a sandwich and just trying to get through their day, we don't ever hear about those. But that transgender person that went into GameStop kicking shit around screaming, "It's ma'am!" Well, we fucking all saw that.
Yeah.
And so, and this is a real easy, it's easy PSYOP shit, and it's never, ever, ever going to stop. I mean, as long as magicians can play sleight of hand games, as long as that fucking three-card Monty works, this kind of shit's going to be a problem. And even more so because social media has made us fucking socially so thick and so it's this or it's that. I had somebody tell me not to body shame people because I was calling Professor Dave Tubby. It's like, if you had the fucking words to come out of that man's mouth, that fat piece of shit, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'll call him way worse than that. But, oh, don't body shame. It's like, man, gives one size fits all rules. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes down to myself is what I'm constantly trying to push. My propaganda that I'm trying to push is become your own magician. And that's the only way to counteract the sorcery of the dark ones. And I think that's exactly then what is being hidden by the academic institution and the material, scientific materialist, is that we are our own magician, king, lover, warriors. And I think the big psyop of this no kings nonsense that's going on, which I then also agree that the fucking global techno parasitic class are just that. They're trying to raise themselves up as the higher Anunnaki bloodline families. But the idea is that if instead of no kings, how about everyone become your own fucking king? Everyone become your own queen. Exactly, Judith. It's like, I don't understand this nonsense. I want to figure out who's running the hermeticist pot, the website, because they're putting Aleister Crowley's image with an image of no king. And of all fucking people who's telling us to become kings, it's Aleister fucking Crowley. And so if this guy's watching right now, I hope he hears me and he can come at me whenever he wants, because that's fucking nonsense. And you're changing history again and making people believe that some fucking nonsensical movement, which is being produced by the Walmart woman and these other oligarchic technocrats are trying to push this somewhere. It's like, what the fuck is going on? And so, sorry, I've been thinking about this a lot. So this has nothing to do with you, man.
I can tell.
But I'm going to be doing a live stream about it soon. It's like, if we all become warrior magician kings, then nobody can rule over us. And then we're all stars. That's like, I don't understand it. That's what the Egyptians of the world are trying to teach. And that's what we're all trying to become pharaohs.
It's even part of the Yadhe Vadhe formula, the king and the queen.
Thank you. Exactly. And that's why it's esoteric. And that's why it's like they try to admonish us and they make the occult bad. It's nonsense, because the occult just means hidden. And this shit is hidden for a reason, because it's put in the hands of the dark sorcerers and they don't want anyone else to know about it. Because if you know about it, and then you can't be controlled.
But when it comes to sorcery and magic and that sort of stuff, there's one of my you guys recently see that fruit fly thing where they scanned the fruit fly's brain and they dumped it into the physics engine. Okay.
Wild.
So that gets into the whole thing of, you know, is this all just a simulation? Are we all living in a simulation like this fruit fly? And so here's my question. Here's my little weird idea is if this is a simulation, it's been going on forever. You know, maybe magic was just a shitty, like maybe there was just some shitty patches that needed to be made. And if you like wiggled your finger in the right direction, jumped up and down, you could clip through the wall and fucking end the speed run of your video game quicker. And so they've patched it over the years. We still have all these people telling us you got to do this stuff, but you just keep running into the wall now when you try. I could be wrong about that, but I mean, I you don't know. You know, that fruit fly looked like he was fucking living a pretty good life, man. Running around that Nintendo 64 world.
Those elongated skulls make very interesting resonant chambers. And I think that's not something that science is ready to deal with. But, you know, maybe they were using them as tools in some sort of way. And they did have these things tuned to certain frequencies. So what are we actually looking at when they're elongating a baby's skull? That could be how that's their position in life. You know, that's sort of how they determined these things back then. So you're born into it.
Right. You know, that is an interesting that you mentioned that, because like one of the episodes that I have coming out where I get like more into like the whole residence inside some of these like, you know, massive structures. There was even stuff like academic stuff where it even talked about like some of these places, the vibration literally will affect like your skull and your bones. And like, what if there was like a certain key that your head had to be in to actually pick up that signal? I mean, who knows? I'm, you know, just going with crazy shit. But I mean, again, the resonance would be different on someone's fucking head like that than ours.
And technically, everybody's got a different resonance for their own skull. So How does that affect thought?
Oh yeah, that's it's an interesting thing that the Native Americans and all over the islands, pretty much almost everywhere, they believed that modifying your skull was like a good thing. It made you smarter. It made you more in tune with the gods. Something. It was a good thing. It was done for positive reasons. But you know, we can't test these sort of things today, which is kind of bullshit. We should just clone some people and squish their skulls until we're happy with what we got. They got no fucking rights anyway. If they're clones, we can bend their feet while we're at it. See how that works, dude. Do it all.
It's my clone. I can do what I want with them.
Yeah, make it a clone of me so we can harvest that fucker's organs too. Mine are about shot.
I mean, that's a movie. That's that movie, The Island. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, that's definitely there. And so I don't know, man, that's a tough subject. I think maybe you battle it out with your clone, and then whoever wins is the real person, and then they get tested on.
Well, then I'm fucked then, because my organs are all fucked up. My clone is going to be all like nice and fresh, no alcohol.
Yeah. Well, then I'll it means that you about have half to an work. Hour.
Just yes, I just want to let everybody know about half an hour. I need to get off here. So.
Oh, okay. No, I was going to wrap it up.
Just letting later. Everybody know, so yeah. I don't just bag I out had, after I somebody had, says something.
I was wondering if you looked into. The for lack of a better term, the extraterrestrial alien mummies and
oh, the tridactyl ones, a little bit. I'm sorry,
the tridactyls and so on, yeah.
Although they're interesting to me, it's the problem with Peru again. We know that they got a lot of corruption with the elongated skulls and stuff already, and they're not letting many people put their fingers on these. It's just kind of keeping them in house and generating revenue. So I end up being pretty skeptical of those sorts of things. I would like to see something like that be real, but those do not look real to me. They look fake, and you can't access them unless you're one of the cool kids is a serious problem. That always bothers me, unfortunately, because like if aliens have visited Earth and we have mummies of them and stuff, they would quite certainly be the kind of thing that would be very valuable and you know, well preserved and stuffed in some rich dude's closet or whatever. And it also the kind of thing that some smoke and mirrors bullshit like this would make it a whole lot easier to move around, to hide, to talk about and stuff. Cause nobody, you know, it's that sleight of hand shit again, right? You convince everybody that you're stupid. And then all of a sudden when you do something the least bit intelligent, they're like, well, goddamn, that guy's a genius. Like, no, you just thought I was stupid. Same kind of thing. So I'm pretty skeptical of anything that comes out of Peru that they don't. And it's not because I hate Peru. It's just I've researched their archaeology a lot. And man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. It fucking, you go down there with $50 and you're going to get some artifacts, buddy.
Pillars of the Past. I mean, he goes through all of these sites that are completely undocumented and finds these huge caches full of bodies that have already been looted and all these other things. And it's just like he's just live streaming it out to the world, showing everybody how poor the condition of all this stuff is down there. It's like, yeah, it's like the Wild West. Of course, you know, you can come up with mummies of any sort.
And then you have to wonder if it's because, like, you know, he's in trouble right now, right?
I didn't hear about that.
Oh yeah, he got accused of Raul got accused of doing some bad stuff, and multiple women accused him, and so I don't know, you know, is it true or is it to silence this guy that's going and putting his Dick Skinners where they don't belong? So it's this kind of stuff gets really tough. The fact of the matter is this is one of the reasons I scream about transparency. I should mention I talked. My friend Timmy, hey Tim, sorry, I don't have the chat scrolling on the screen, so I have to keep another tab open to go look. I apologize. He wanted to know if I was going to talk about the stuff in Turkey, because I've been making a big stink about this portcullis. They call them a porthole stones. They're these big stones that have, I will have it on my thing already. They're these big stones that have... there's doors in them, right? So this thing here was dug up in 2010 and they reburied it shortly thereafter. They wrapped it in some plastic and then they sifted the dirt, but they reburied it. I came after Lee Clare on Twitter about this a couple nights ago and asking him, hey, man, why the fuck are you guys doing this? This is bad optics. Ultimately, this is bad optics. This is a really cool looking artifact. You guys bury it. You've had shit stolen from Göbekli Tepe before. It was stolen out of the ground. Just bad optics. And he told me I was stupid, basically. And so I ended up lighting him up like a Christmas tree because, well, like Nick said at the beginning, this is, you fucking deserve it, buddy. I got a shotgun here. I will use it. And I splattered him all over the place for a minute, but the reality of it is, this is stupid. So, you know, if you're going to store things like this, you put them in your fucking, what I told him is, you know, if I wanted to store something, I'd ask my sister if I could, you know, use a spot in her garage as opposed to bury it in the fucking ground. But that's just me. At any rate, there's two of things like this. There's another one that's not quite as ornate that's also buried at Göbekli Tepe. This is on the northwestern mound, and then the other one's buried in Enclosure B, if memory serves. And, yeah, I've got a video. I'm in the process of editing it now, Tim, and everybody else, and it should be up tonight or tomorrow. And, it's ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous that you can't say that we don't have the room or something to store an artifact like this when the site is generating stupid amounts of money and you're building these big enclosures and whatnot. Pull the fucking thing out of the ground and or build a little tarp over it or whatever the hell you need to do. But leaving it in the ground, to me, is a great way to facilitate theft. And considering that we know that this is a problem, especially in poorer nations, and now I told Lee Clare that if it got stolen out of the ground, that I would blame him. But when I was yelling at him, I didn't realize that it was buried under Klaus Schmidt. So I would have to be potentially yelling at Klaus Schmidt, who's no longer with us. But at any rate, burying artifacts in the ground is a great way to facilitate theft. And they're like, oh, but it's under CCTV footage nowadays. And I'm like, yeah, so was Epstein's cell. Didn't do him any fucking good, did it? I buying that shit. Money fixes cameras really quick, or breaks cameras really quick, however you want to look at it.
Especially when you got little animal effigies, it looks like, right next to it. So, you know, that's like, what, 100 grand, 100 grand, 100 grand. You're just counting it up and making all the estimates right there from these pictures.
Yeah. The thing that was stolen was the vulture-headed stone that's disappeared around 2010. It was a vulture-headed, it was like a human head with a vulture head on top of it that came from a statue. Klaus Schmidt was fined about, it came up to about $9,800 was what it was at the time. And this is, you know, like 2006, actually, I think it was. So it's a fairly substantial chunk of money, probably like 20 grand or so nowadays, but still nothing compared to what that thing sold for. So that's, I mean, that could have been a great cottage industry for him. Now, I'm not saying Klaus did that. The problem is this methodology allows for things to be stolen. When they're in the fucking museums, shit don't disappear unless the U.S. Army or somebody rolls through, right? Then, yeah, then the museums close down. But generally speaking, the days of cat burglars breaking in and using glass cutters to steal the jewels out of the little display case are fucking, that's relegated to the movies from 50 years ago, man. The shit gets stolen when it's in the ground still, and you rob the armored car, not the bank, and ideally you rob the guy walking from the business to the car. Right. This is no brainer shit. You get the stuff when it's easiest. But again, these white collar folks, it's to their credit in a lot of ways. A lot of them are just nice guys and don't fucking know any better. But because of that, the shit heel next to him that does know better can pretend he's ignorant as fuck too and sell this stuff on the black market. So anyway, rant over for a minute.
Sorry, real quick. Do you have an idea of what that might be?
Yeah, there's. They think it was used for doorways, for enclosures. Like they think maybe you were on top of the enclosures, and like you would completely seal the enclosure from the ground, and the only way in or out was from the top. Or maybe they were just stood upright, and then there were a doorway to like a normal door. But this one's unique in the fact that it's two, and it's pretty ornate. So it is the best example that we have found so far, definitely, and they're pretty sure it was a ceremonial type of gig on this one.
Mm.
But there is some. Go ahead.
To me, it seems like what's missing from all of this is the sacred, because all of this is on somebody else's holy ground. And these archaeologists, they don't view it as holy ground. And these robbers, they don't view it as holy ground. And the people who would consider it holy ground, they're long dead. So this is why we have a problem, is because they don't have that sacred mindset. They're not looking at these objects as being sacred things. It's more of just more artifacts that they can catalog and put up on a shelf or keep in the ground.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the stuff they would never say it nowadays, but in the time when NAGPRA was being debated in the United States, it was quite common to see the people opposing it say things like indigenous archaeology is pseudo archaeology. Straight up. They just fucking straight up. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. If you're doing archaeology from an indigenous perspective, you're not doing real. It's fake. It's not science. So that's the attitude. And now they'll pretend now that that's not the case. But that's the way that they do that is they ostracize people like Elizabeth Weiss, right? You guys know who she is. She's an anthropologist who is heavily critical of NAGPRA. So they ostracize her. But they still do the exact same things, the exact same methodologies that created all the problems to begin with, where they ignore indigenous accounts. And now it's one thing to take, and I can see why an Indian will get offended if you just come in and take an indigenous account and translate it into ancient artifacts, ancient technology, Atlantis every single time. I can see why that would get fucking old. It's like you're just taking my myths and you're just using them to push your narrative. However, that's no different than what the scientists are doing. We're going to talk about the peopling of the Americas. We want to know the Liberian land bridge. So let's see how Kennewick Man fits into that. And the natives and the scientists argued about that one for a long fucking time. That standard operating procedure with those guys is ignore indigenous accounts. Pat him on the head. Thanks for the artifacts, boys.
Yes.
Anyway, I hope that answered your question, Tim. I gotta look and see if Tim's a good guy. I want to make sure I made him happy with that. Sorry.
No, that's fine. No, that was great. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you, Tim. And thanks, Nick. Yeah, I need to get more monitors. I need to buy one of those bat cave setups instead of this little laptop and shit. But I'm so man. Dude, my shoes still have holes on them and shit. Dude, I'm always gonna be poor white trash no matter how much money I have. So,
aren't we all?
Yeah, Pretty much.
Yeah. Oh. Was there anything anybody else wanted to ask? We could wrap it up soon. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, Dan, thank you very much for coming on again, man. It's always a blast.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it.
We talked about a lot more than I thought, too, which was great. Nice. Before we wrap it up, I'll let everybody plug their shows again. Judith the Loon, if you're doing I know you might have been having technical difficulties over there.
Oh.
Yeah.
If my volume acts funny, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay. You can catch me at on YouTube and on X as the Loon.
Thank you.
And thank you for having me, Nick.
Of course. And Headless Giant, what is going on, sir?
How you doing? Yeah, I apologize for the motorcycle rally that goes on outside my door every time I start podcasting, but, you know, it's the way things are.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you can find me on X and on YouTube, also on Instagram at The Headless Giant. And, check out my show with Ethan Indigo and Ricardo Calvadio when we were talking about the all sorts of crazy stuff this morning, free energy, machine elves, all kinds of stuff. It's a great 2-hour round trip. So check out the trilogues. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, sir. And Brandon, please let them know where they can find you.
Please head on over to Magus in the Media on my YouTube, on my X, on my Instagram, on all the social media platforms. I'm here to help break down the myth, the magic, and the meaning, and the things, and all the shit that we love together. I want to say something before I go. I just want people to know that even though we're occultists, as this is a comment that I saw, and I shouldn't react to comments, but I'm going to do it anyway, is that there are people out there who want to comment, and it's fine. But I think you forget that the occultists that you see on this panel, even if they don't say it, I'm going to say it for you, we are very divine people. Like we worship things and gods, and like we look at Nick, he's doing the sacred architecture stuff right now. And so if you don't think that we don't want to walk into churches and feel the mystical beauty of the divine, you're fucking crazy. And so you know who you are, who I'm responding to. And I just want everybody to know that we are God's people. And we all are God's people. And it doesn't matter who, what God, it's the divine. And we worship that which is. And so I just, I'm feeling hot and spicy because I'm in a hot and spicy land right now. Oh, yeah, and I just truly feel that I hope people, I want us to help rewrite what it means to be an occultist, a magician, a king, a lover, and a warrior. And I think it's a really important thing for us all to know. And so, like I said before, I want everybody to do that for themselves. And so tap into your nervous system, become your own hermetic, become your own magician, king, lover, warrior, and just do the thing. Listen and follow everyone here because there is shit going on right now and it's time for us to take over this world in our own bubbles. And I think everyone here can agree with that. And so again, Nick, you're the man. Dan, I love watching you do what you do on X and everything that you're doing. And so I so appreciate you coming on here and chatting with us and just continue fighting the good fight because there's fucking morons everywhere. And we just got to flap them away with all the great things that we do. So anyway, that's what I got.
Thank you. Ethan, what's going on, sir?
Well, I'll try not to tear up and I'll try to add a little on top of that well said presentation, Brandon. You know, I think of occult rejects as de-occultists, right? We reject, we've been rejected by the secrecy and our sharing ideas, all of us. So I think that's a really powerful, proper thing to do. And obviously, Dan, that you share everything you share too. So yeah, props to everyone here. Appreciate you guys for all that. And Ethan Indigo Smith on all the social media. And I appreciate everyone and on the chat as well. So
thank you for making it, Ethan. Always appreciate it. Dan, please. This is the super sexy day. Let everybody know what's up with you, where they can find all your stuff, any events coming up that you'll be speaking at, please.
Yep, I'll be in Sedona, Arizona, May 1st through 3rd for the Quest for Ancient Civilizations Conference. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be out drinking and partying with everybody, and it's going to be great. You can find me on YouTube and on Twitter and on Instagram and stuff. I'm around. You'll probably find my links at Dedunking stuff. People know who I am. They just don't like me. Really quickly, one thing to say about about being all of us being our own kings or being our own things is, Jewel said that we're God's hands. She sang that over and over and over again at the end of one of her songs. And you know, if you look at things that way, sometimes God's giving you a massage, but some people, they don't deserve a massage. Some people deserve a fucking 2-pound sledgehammer to the ass. And that's when I'm God's hands. So the rest of the time, you guys give them a massage. But when they need their fucking teeth knocked in, hallelujah. But thanks a lot, man. This has been a lot of fun. I really enjoy talking to you guys. Thank you so much for weighing in. Sorry you had technical difficulties, Judas. But yeah, we'll have to do this again sometime soon.
Hell yeah, and I'll always have a blast with you, man. And if he says he's going to be hanging out and partying, he is. He will be. You know, I know for
definitely a fact. Will be.
yeah. And he's a cool motherfucker in person, too. So definitely. No, if you can make it to that event, I highly suggest it. Like I said, I went to the last one. Me and Hellas were there. It was a blast. It was amazing speakers, a great time. Even if the food was fucking slamming, too. So,
yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Awesome. So check it out. And again, thank you, Dan. And thanks for sharing it out. That's awesome. It was great to see a lot of the comments from your side in here, too. Good stuff. That's why we go live. And until the next one, everybody be well. Later.